Hey,
we're the few.
You're listening to Rock Paper Podcast.
Come to Foo Bar on December 17th for our 5th annual Christmas Bash and Food Drive to see us, along with Noesis, Forgetting January, The Failures, and our good friends from Minneapolis, Vaudeville.
Doors open at 6:30 p.m. and tickets are only $7.
Be sure to bring canned food or other non-perishable food items for donation to the St. Louis Area Food Bank so we can help those less fortunate have a better holiday season.
All tickets purchased in advance will be entered to win 4 tickets to see Star Wars Rogue One on us.
The winner will be announced at the end of the night.
Also, if you haven't picked up our new record, Sleep Tight When You Wake Up Will Be Gone, grab your physical copy from us on the 17th or download digitally anytime.
Now back to your regularly scheduled programming.
Hey everybody, Shane Presley here with Rock Paper Podcast. Hey, quick reminder, if anybody hasn't checked it out, I put together this playlist on Spotify called the Rock Paper Podcast Favorites. All kinds of local music and guests from the show. About 2 or 3 songs from everybody I could find on there. So head over to Spotify, check it out, find some new great music. Also, want to tell you about my friends over at The Gaslight. Check them out over on the hill, gaslightstl.com. And go over there and book yourself a recording session. It's a beautiful studio here in town, attached to a bar. It's a really unique experience. You can come in and you can record, or you can listen to one of your favorite bands recording their record, and just have a lot of fun over there. So again, GaslightSTL.com, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and get involved. Check out their full listing of upcoming events on the website. Also want to tell you about my friends over at Music Record Shop. Find them over there on Washington Avenue, right next to KDHX, brand new location. They got a lot of great stuff going on. Check it out on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, musicrecordshop.com. A lot of great live in-stores on the weekends. On Fridays, all new music happy hour, all new records in-store. And they got a great local selection. You can get in there, check that out. And if you want your own records on the shelf, hit them up about that, see how you can make that happen. And then check it all out. Shop online 24/7 at musicrecordshop.com.
Podcast is kind of like it's like a radio show that's not on the radio. It's on the internet. Does that make sense?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That's also like my mom. It makes it sound more confusing, doesn't it? It sounds like this.
Hi, this is Aqua Teen, and you're listening to Rock Paper Podcast with Shane Presley. Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast, y'all.
everybody. Shane Presley here, Rock Paper Podcast, coming to you from St. Louis, Missouri. Hey, I wanted to remind everybody, if you haven't checked it out, go on over to Spotify and check out the Spotify playlist I put together. Just search Rock Paper Podcast and it should pop up. There are a bunch of my favorites from over the last time doing the show, little two or three songs from everybody, and I'll make sure to add these guys to that list. I'm hanging out tonight with the guys of Aquitaine, right?
That's right.
Hi, good to see you guys. This is exciting. Getting to officially meet you guys. I've known Bob a little bit, thanks for having me over to hang out.
So exciting for you.
Yeah. but I guess before we get going too far, you guys want to go around the room and introduce yourselves and say hey?
I'm Bob McMahon. I play drums for Aquitaine.
I'm Graham. I play guitar, a little bit of keyboards. We all play keyboards and guitar, so it's kind of tough to, like, you know, just isolate ourselves to one instrument. But
Will, vocals, guitar.
I'm Dave, and I play bass mostly, but sometimes guitar and sometimes sing.
Yeah, I guess I sing too.
Yeah. So what do you guys, on your live shows, you guys just kind of alternate moving around the stage a little bit? Or how's that work with playing the different instruments?
A little bit. We try not to too much just because it destroys the momentum a little bit. But yeah, we do switch a little bit. Graham and I will switch once or twice, right?
We switch bass and lead guitar a little bit, but for the most part, we just kind of keep it as a straight four-piece. I play a lot of the guitar stuff. Like, Bob plays a great solo. Solo on a song, and I learned it, so I play it. But, you know, on the CD, it's him. Live, it's me.
Very cool. Yeah, I was at Bald Eagle Mountains band practice one day, it was just a cool thing. Like, I was... You know, they're jamming, and then all of a sudden, the bass player and guitar player switch guitars, and you know, it was just like, you don't see a whole lot of that, you know, a lot of the band switching instruments and stuff throughout a show, but it was just kind of neat to see them flip-flop there in the middle of it, and so, I think that's neat that you guys have that range, though, as musicians.
Thanks. So Bob and I try to fill the space in the set while we're doing the switch.
Just learn some juggling or something.
Tell some funny jokes.
Yeah, I know.
But, I was listening to your guys' new record, and I noticed, I read that on the Bandcamp info that you all have a guitar solo on the record. Is that
at least
that
one each, yeah.
So I thought that was interesting that, like, you know, saying that you... Bob played guitar on the record and stuff.
Yeah, it was fun to do that. I will say, I kind of wonder, you know, the definition of solo, because your song, your solo, you're singing over that. Is that technically a guitar solo at that point?
Yeah,
or are you just lying to the people?
That's true. I'm playing the guitar part during the bridge. So
definitely it's a prominent
solo leader. Might be a loose definition there, but yeah, which is funny, because before I started playing bass, I was playing most of the guitar and solo, so... But it's nice to let everybody play, and I think it adds a lot to the recording.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I guess before we get too deep into the record and stuff, I kind of want to go back, because, like, this is, like, again, this is my first time really getting to hang with you guys. I kind of like to go back and cover some of this backstory, how this lineup came to be and how the group came to be and all this stuff. So where does this band get started?
You want to start, Will, since you are the grand poopah founder of this band?
Well, it all started, Chris Luckett and Ken Adelman of the Orbs, we started practicing together as a potential side project for themselves. Pulled in Gerald Good of Bullet Pop.
Bullet Pop, yeah.
And at some point, you know, we decided to transition out of that format. And Chris Gerald and I continued to practice, and Dave, you could probably speak a little more to how you ended up being pulled.
So I knew Gerald, who was playing bass at the time. We had both played in a band. Oh gosh, so this was 2011 when this was happening, or maybe even the end of 2010. Probably almost 10 years before that, Gerald and I played in a band together very briefly, but had sort of stayed in contact. So I think he heard, or I mentioned that to him, I was looking to get into a band again. I had taken a year or two off just because I was traveling so much for work and stuff. And he's like, well, I'm practicing with these guys, and why don't you come over? And I think at that time I was thinking, I kind of want to start my own thing from scratch. I don't know if I want to jump into something that was already kind of in motion. But first practice, though, I'm like, oh, these guys are cool, and the sounds that they're making and the style of music is very much in line with what I sort of had in mind. And Graham actually was...
Yeah, Graham showed up to the practice as well.
Yep.
Yeah,
I was there for the first one. There was some discussion. I remember meeting with you and Gerald at the Royale and discussing, you know. So I went along, and you guys played as a unit, and it was fantastic. And it's like, there's nothing for me to add to this. So I was just sort of like the super fan for the first year or two.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's the interesting thing. I truly was like a huge fan before I actually joined. Because
you're more than just a fan. I mean, you provide great feedback and sat in our studio sessions and, you know, really, you know, I mean, influenced the records themselves.
Well, thank you. So I was a super fan.
Yeah, super duper fan.
So that was kind of how that all started. And the original unit of Aquitaine was awesome. I mean, you know, I saw you guys numerous times, and never thought I'd be here today as a part of the unit.
So we got going within a year or so, about early to mid 2012, recorded an EP, American Pulverizer Part 1, with Will, myself, Gerald, and Chris. And then about a year later, started recording almost immediately after releasing the first one, sort of a follow-up EP, Part 2, American Pulverizer Part 2. Right about that time, though, Chris, first Gerald left the band, and Chris then left the band. Both of them ended up moving away. Chris moved to Louisville, Gerald moved to Tucson. So Graham joined after Gerald left, at which time I switched from guitar to bass. And then when Chris left, we found Bob. So Bob can tell the story of how Aquitaine found Bob. Just
got a friend request from Dave, and, you know, I've been doing more freelancing for the RFT. It was like, who's this guy? Oh, local music scene. Yeah, okay. And then I got a message like, join the band. I was like, yeah, okay. Sit in, and that'll be cool. I remember I'd seen them once or twice, enjoyed it, and then I think actually what kind of clicked for me is I like to listen to Jeff Hess's Afternoon Delight show on KDHX, and he always has these cool, like, rare 60s rock songs, like kind of garage rock stuff I'm into, and he played something. I just assumed this is like, oh, some other random cool Jeff, you know, 60s song. It turned out to be Two of Me by Aquitaine. It's like, oh, not bad. That's cool. And so, yeah, I was happy and was like, yeah, why not jam and see what happens and join them. And yeah, I got going to the old rehearsal space by the tasty but occasionally, sort of scary looking Chinese restaurant on Jefferson and Cherokee.
Yeah.
Hong Kong Express.
Yeah, that's where we used to rehearse for a while. So.
So, it was a very interesting practice space right there in Jefferson. It smelled like the 70s. When you walked in, it was like the 70s. Yeah. I don't know how to articulate any better than that.
Yeah.
It was like an old doctor's office building type thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's, yeah. I think I did a podcast over there with Von Drucks.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, we shared that room. Yeah.
The room. Yeah. Yeah. So the Von Drucks, some Poorhouse Says, I think John Henry, or what was that movie?
They, so Shark Dad like posted like their set list on the wall, so assuming they must have been there.
A few other bands practiced in that space for a while. I think
I saw Bruiser Queen, or maybe they just maybe.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I did have some sort of space there. I think Will Thunderman also had a room there.
But yeah, it was seemed like it was quite a few musicians and bands in and out of there.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was interesting. That so this lineup so what the we were like
2 years
two,
or something?
Yeah, we're about, yeah.
2014 yeah. I know. So yeah, I joined, and that was the final piece of the puzzle because Graham joined before me.
Right.
So you guys. So yeah. Then so is this the first record with this?
This is the first full length record, but we did two EPs. Both are 5 songs apiece. So
yeah, but the first with this lineup.
Yeah.
Sure.
But first with this lineup, yeah, because Graham joined. I think you probably played the EP release party, right?
Yeah,
but
American World of Roger too. Yeah,
but you didn't record on it, although you did sit in and helped us, critiqued us as we recorded and told us when to redo that part because it wasn't good enough or whatever. But yeah, so Graham joined right at that sort of transition, and then Bob joined a few months later, and then we started working on the songs that became part of this record.
Yeah, and that's. Transformation,
yes,
and that's which we just had the release party a little bit ago over at Duck Room.
Yes,
yeah. Yeah. It's a really fun time. This is the largest audience I've ever played to for like original music.
Yeah, great room. I've been to a bunch of shows down there. It's always a good time. Yeah, so the record is available now over at aquitaine.bandcamp.com. You can get it on there, and like we mentioned, stream it on Spotify. And then you guys also have physical copies available?
We do. We have physical copies, which we sell at our shows, as well as they're at Vintage Vinyl, Music Record Store, Euclid, and one more. But
Planet Score.
Planet Score, yeah. So... few different local record shops.
Yeah, get out there and support your local record stores. Keep them alive because there's, especially there's not a lot of them around anymore. So
no.
As we mentioned, only 4 of them.
I know.
So there's very few and far between anymore these days. So get out there and support these places. But yeah, now Music Record Shop's a sponsor of this show, so I'm thrilled to have them a part of it, and
they're great.
So supporting local music that way, but and that's always fun to go over there. They have a great local music selection, too, so it's always
new
fun.
Location
to,
too, right?
Yeah, just they moved to Wash Ave next to KDHX,
right, next door. Yeah.
But yeah, Vintage Vinyl. You guys will be there doing a live in store, which I thought was really cool. That's on December 11th. You can so come out and you guys are gonna jam
the rocking hour of 4 p.m.
Yeah,
Sunday afternoon. Yeah. But then again, we shouldn't be competing with a lot of other concerts at that time. Yeah. So should be good. Yeah.
Later that night is Steel Panther.
Oh yeah,
at the pageant. So you can make it a kind of a double
kind of
feature.
A Steel Panther pre-party kind of thing. Yeah. That sounds like we'll do that. It's very similar. not too much, unfortunately.
But you guys plan to do the whole record, or what?
We should discuss that.
I think we have like about 35 minutes allotted, so I don't know that the whole record will slot in.
Right.
We may have to drop
songs fast.
Yeah, it's probably double time.
A medley.
We won't be able to tell
like
our
Elvis
jokes.
Would do.
But so we'll probably play many of the songs off that album.
But yeah, come out, see them live, Vintage Vinyl, December 11th, 4 p.m., and you can also grab a copy while you're there.
Yeah.
And but yeah, that's always a cool thing. I mean, like, I don't know. That, for me, like, I've never had a band or anything, but like, I can imagine, like, that's got to be one of the coolest feelings to, one, to have your record on the shelves at a record store, and but then also to play at a record store like Vintage Vinyl, doing these live in stores and stuff. It's just like...
Yeah, I mean, too young to get into, like, certain venues that used to see lots of, that's how I do local music, was seeing people play at Vintage, so it's a lot of fun. I'm really excited to do that.
For sure, you get your name on the marquee and everything.
Yeah, hopefully. Yeah, it's better.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's, like I said, I mean, those are, that's just got to be a pretty incredible feeling to be a part of that, so I'm excited for you guys.
Thank you. Yeah. We're excited too.
Yeah,
it's really, I think it's just cool because we recorded the album right across the street at Mound Sound, which is Ben Hinn, Troubadour Dolly fame, his sort of studio that was underneath Go Music, right? Is that the music store? Yeah, so literally it's just, you know, almost diagonal from Vintage Vinyl and Blueberry Hill, so the fact that we're sort of recording it there and then crossing the street to sort of play it and sell it is pretty cool, at least to me.
Yeah.
Well, that since moved the studio.
Yeah, he's moved the studio.
That's where we did most of the tracking.
Right. Is that, you guys get any fun stories out of recording in the studio or anything? Or anything?
Soul Taco.
Yeah, we became huge fans of Soul Taco while we were recording. I don't know.
To this point where we got a photo of the restaurant in the back of the CD.
In the liner notes. But, and in fact, now whenever I play a few of the songs, like live, I always have like flashbacks to Soul Taco, and if I'm hungry, I start lusting over Soul Taco. So I have to dedicate the album to them a little bit. But otherwise, I mean, it was a very, recording with Ben was great. He was just very competent, but yet chill. Like, he didn't make us feel rushed, and we were able to kind of like tinker a lot. I think try like, oh, let's throw in an oboe. Well, not really, but, you know, or something, you know, just random kind of instrumentation that, you know, kind of on the spot in the moment. And he really encouraged that, but also kind of gave us good feedback, like, that's not working so much. You might want to try something else, you know? And so, I don't know. I thought we had a really good experience with working with him, so.
Sure. Or did you guys have a lot of these, like, down pretty tight before going in there, or did you guys, are there some of these kind
we
of
thought
kind
of, we did.
Some of them more than others, probably. Yeah. I don't know, you guys, but I feel like Morning Wakes, which is the first track on the album, we've been playing that one probably the longest, right? So that one was just like go to another studio and bang it out, and it pretty much sounds like it does, or had sound before we went to the studio. But some of the other ones, I think we really kind of constructed in the studio in the different sessions. Like Leave You Behind is a good one where we really, I think, put the different pieces together. And I don't know, in my opinion, that one turned out one of the best songs on the album just because of that. Same with Afterlife, I thought similar, you know, both of those. We had been playing, but we hadn't played them live in like shows as much, so they were really studio creations, and now we played them live a lot. So
there were a couple ones, I think like Entertainment and a couple other songs where they're just like, let's just come up with some ideas for harmonies, which we never really did until we were in the studio, which added some cool layers to that.
Yeah, no, that's a good point.
Yeah, and I guess like all the keyboard stuff we kind of figured out in the studio too.
Right. Yeah, that's always a cool thing for me as a fan to kind of like to hear those early like demo kind of recordings or something, and then and to see how the song takes life in the studio then when the record comes out. And it's like, you know, some of them are pretty close and some are, you know, completely flipped, you know. And so it's just always, I'm a fan of the evolution of song and stuff as they continue to develop. And so that's cool. The title track, Transformation, is one that was grabbed my attention. I liked that one a lot. I liked kind of the way the drums built there, and then like towards the end is that keys or is that guitar? It was
a lot of different guitar, right? Yeah, I think for the most part.
Yeah, you talk about songs that changed from their demo incarnation band stuff.
We should post your original version of that, Will, on Bandcamp or something.
It's like acoustic sort of ballad.
It's almost like a ballad. It's a lot slower, but a lot different.
vocals too.
There's a lot of, you know, what the group's able to really put together. I mean, a lot of the songs, you know, I write are acoustic songs and, you know, much slower and able to, you know, really add a great deal of influence and dynamics with the contributed talents from everyone. But yeah, Transformation especially, I you know, it's it really, you know, took on a whole new energy with you know, with combination of the you know, guitar work throughout, the drum, you know, the driving bass, but the outro, I mean, really the swell of, you know, noise, sound, just really, really, you know, let's say end on a very high note.
Yeah,
sounds great. Yeah, I don't know. So that was one of my favorites. And then, but just, I was reading on there about the reason, like, you guys wrote a little backstory about, like, naming it Transformation, like, why the message of the whole record, right? You guys kind of had, like, a, not exactly a concept album, but, like, yeah, it kind of tells a little story throughout it a little bit. Is that kind of what I was reading through the Bandcamp?
You know, it's, we hadn't named the album almost until the end of recording it, right? I mean, I think we were like, oh, we can call it this or this, you know, different, some of the different lyrics and phrases and some of the different songs. And I think we settled on Transformation just because it just felt like, you know, while we haven't really departed from the original Aqua Teen sound, we did obviously make some changes, you know, real and more perceptual. I mean, but the lineup changes, but I think we all went through different things from since the last album was recorded to this one, in terms of things in life, good and bad. The city went through some transformation changes, so it just felt like it was sort of the right way to look at the whole album. So
right, that do you guys, is this a pretty collaborative effort in, of all of you guys bringing your own stuff in, or do you like recently Will saying you write a lot of these on acoustic and things, and then you just kind of bring to the band to build? And
yeah, I'd say so. Yeah, I mean, and both from the songwriting and also the song development standpoint.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, everyone, you know, wrote at least one song,
right?
You know, on the album, and yeah, I think you really look to, I mean, you know, specifically, you know, I guess going back to the theme of the album, you know, really seeing how the, you know, songs and sound did develop, you know, throughout the whole process, you know, as large part to, you know, I mean, to do with the contributing members, but at the same time, I mean, we also had two new additions.
Sure.
But yeah, no, it's really neat process experience. Really, you know, have everyone's. Although, you know, we do have similar, I guess, musical tastes, but at the same time, I think different styles and, you know, different talents to actually offer.
So all four of you all wrote lyrics for the record. All wrote individual songs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think like a lot of them, we came in like with fairly complete songs, but we all like made adjustments to each other's songs. That's where the kind of collaborative nature took hold.
Right.
Like I think there was one song Will had that had more like a swing feel, and I'm like, no, let's play it straight like this. Yeah. And then I had like my song Afterlife. Dave had some really cool like guitar additions in the outro, and we all kind of threw in stuff like that. It's where it became, you know, more of a band thing, even though there's definitely like a defining author of each song.
Right. Mm-hmm. And it's nice that, you know, there's no ego or whatever, where you guys can you know, especially I would imagine, like, giving a song up is pretty vulnerable feeling. Like, you just, like, you know, hey, this is something personal I wrote, and here it is, and then, like, and allowing the band to adjust and tweak it and make it, you know, for the suited for the band and things. But I think that's a pretty great thing to be able to have that feature to be able to, you can all be a part of this and stuff, and all have that voice heard on throughout the record.
Definitely. Yeah. No, it's you know, I've been in a lot of different bands, and this one seems like the most laid back, and everybody's got a very kind of positive but easygoing attitude, and I think it comes from, you know, we all respect each other's sort of talents and sort of ideas. So if, you know, Bob says, no, we shouldn't do it that way, we should do it this way, I mean, because of, you know, what Bob contributes, you know, we listen to him versus, you know, not but but I think I don't know, it's cool because we kind of that perfect blend where you really can sort of come to the band with, like, here's a song I wrote. It's not 100% done, but, you know, it's got a strong foundation, and then the rest kind of gets filled in by the band, or you can come with just, like, I just had this one riff, but I haven't written anything else yet, and it needs, you know, all the other fixins that go along with it, you know, kind of can flex either way.
Yeah. So you guys been all playing music for a long time, like, through as kids and stuff too, or is this all when you guys really get going playing your instruments and stuff? Like,
is this anybody's first band here?
No, it's not
bad. I've done enough of these, talking to some guys, like, there's and then, you know, some guys are in the basement kind of thing, they play around with the guitar and stuff, but, like, never got out there and to do it live like this in a band until, you know, till they're older or whatever, and then all of a sudden, like, okay, I'll give it a try. And but yeah, you hear those stories of, you know, they obviously they're fantastic musicians, but just never stepped out on the stage.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And about a year break before Aquitaine, and there's no better feeling than just playing music with other people after not doing it for a very long time.
Yeah.
I mean, it's definitely, good feeling. I mean, I certainly remember the first time I did it originally, and then revisiting it, you know, through this group, and then the opportunity to play live is a whole other experience.
I mean,
it's neat.
Yeah. Do you guys get a? Yeah, obviously. Having families and things and stuff, but you guys get to do other fun stuff besides just practice and play shows together, or I talked to these guys earlier, and they, you know, they, like, all took a road trip together, went to go see one of their favorite bands, they went to see Brand New in Chicago. But I don't know if you guys get to do fun stuff like that together. Or
record some pretty sweet podcasts.
Here we go. Yeah.
We want to go see Supersonic together.
Yeah. Yeah. Mostly saw that. The Oasis documentary.
Unfortunately, couldn't attend the 3/4 of Aquitaine.
Yeah.
I would have been there.
Yeah, I had some other pre-existing duties. Thanks.
Yeah,
we certainly should do more of that. But I mean, like, Bob's in another band in addition to this. He fronts other people, and then Graham plays on occasion with another band called Prune. So
yeah, sporadic. Like, when we get active, we get really active, but then we won't get active for 8 months.
Yeah, and I play, like, I don't know, just a cover band and some other stuff. So it's fun because we kind of, you know, get to play in other things as well, but we still have to make time to kind of focus on Aquitaine when we need to.
Right. Yeah, that's like, there seems to be, obviously, again, having a lot of these conversations with a lot of bands, and it seems everybody's got two or three projects they're in, and some sense or another and stuff. So it is kind of crazy, like, how many people are playing in all around different scenes and around town and stuff. And
I've been playing with in St. Louis band since like 99, probably, I think, was when I moved back and started or joined a band. And it's funny to me, like, look at sort of like the family trees of the different bands. Like, there's a lot of people who are like, oh, I played with that person back in, you know, this band, or, you know, and there's just so much crossover in that sense. And I think it's part of what kind of connects the St. Louis music community. I mean, literally, it's almost like a large family in that sense.
Right, definitely.
That's how we perform.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we have those types of connections and relationships. So.
Yeah. Well, again, with the Vintage Vinyl, you guys also have another live show coming out on January 21st. Schlafly Tap Room with the Langoliers and what's it?
Potomac Accord?
Yeah,
Potomac Accord. Yeah.
Yeah, and an important thing to note, both of those shows are totally free.
Yeah, there you go.
That's right. Yeah.
That's a good deal.
Yeah, for sure.
I like free shows. Langoliers, good friends of the show. Mm-hmm. We hung out with down there in Festus, Missouri, where they're from, and recorded. So, those guys are a lot of fun.
Yeah, I love what Corey's doing. Corey Villanglier, so that music, what is the place called? He runs a venue.
Main Street.
Main Street
Music and Coffee.
That was a fun place. Yeah. Other people played. He's bringing bands down there.
For sure. Yeah, he's been doing a lot to bring local original music down there to the folks at Festus area. And so I think it's great that to see people doing that, to keep live local original music going and stuff. Give you another room, especially somewhere just outside of town, you know, instead of playing the same rooms in town and stuff.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, I remember a lot of the cooler bars were East Side, you know, everything from Pops to like the old 313 in Belleville, Stagger Inn in Edwardsville. I mean, those are fun clubs to play, and it's kind of like a whole other audience than what you might see. I mean, not the ones around here, so.
Yeah, for sure. You guys remember some of those first shows that you got to play in other bands and everything else, too? Some of the early memories of playing?
Yeah. I mean, I'm old enough to play. I played at Kennedy's and Bernard's Pub, so.
Right.
Do you ever play there, Graham, any of those?
Kennedy's, yes. Yeah. I don't think we ever... we may have played Bernard's Pub once.
Yeah.
With the Giver Lizard.
Yeah. So, I don't know. It's cool. I mean, I'm you know, sad that the High Point doesn't exist anymore and there's some of those types of places, but I think St. Louis now has a lot of really good venues. I mean, now it's just Del Mar Hall opening up. I think that's added a whole nother genre or sort of dimension to the local music scene, and there's, you know, there's a lot of really good quality professional venues that support local music, and because I remember, you know, there were not that many places to play, especially if you were going to play your own stuff, and like some of those Bernards, I think you were essentially paying to play. You had to like buy a bunch of tickets that you can then resell to family and friends and others, and but now it's a lot more supportive in that sense.
Right. Yeah. You guys been over to Del Mar Hall yet?
I have not yet. Mm-hmm. I've been meaning to, but I haven't got there yet.
I've been twice so far. I went to the Stir Show, grand opening. And then I went to see Here Come the Mummies right before Halloween.
And did you catch Pelander's Ease? It's always the trip.
They were crazy. It was like one of the. I mean, I don't think a lot of people knew what they were getting into.
Yeah.
I think some people started getting very, very aggravated.
It is almost like more performance art.
It's not exactly a whole lot of music. It's just them running around and in these crazy outfits and things. It was a lot of fun. Like, I was laughing hysterically for most of it just because it was one of the craziest live shows I've ever seen.
Same here.
They, like, threw these, like, pots and pan kind of thing out into the audience with drumsticks and let everybody, like, play along to the songs and stuff, like, all those kind of things. And then, like, so it was very interactive with the crowd. But, I don't know that it was, like, they were selling records, which I don't know that I would buy a record of it, but it's definitely something you had to see. It was, but yeah, it was a good time. But anyway, Here Come the Mummies sounded awesome. They've always one of my favorite bands to catch live. Again, it's a great stage show, but it sounds awesome too. Yeah. They're just a great funk band. So anyway, yeah, so two shows over there, and they both sounded great, and it's a beautiful room, and again, I'm excited to see what happens over there with the as they continue to develop and bring more great talent through there and stuff like. But they've already, you know, the opening month they had a stacked bill full of all, you know, almost every night there was a great show there. And, but again, I agree. There's some really great rooms all around this around St. Louis right now, and kind of stinks that some of them have gone away, but there's a lot of other good ones to step up in their place. But yeah, like you see rooms like the Demo and things. There's a lot of good rooms that I enjoy that are gone now and just recently and things. So, but yeah, there's always seems to work out and figured they figure out somewhere else to go, open up somewhere else and things like that. And
yeah, the toughest one for me personally was, and it's a long time ago, was Mississippi Nights to see that go, because that's where I saw a lot of shows when I was growing up. Most of my first shows actually were there, and that's one of the cool things about Del Mar Hall. Although I've yet to actually go, my understanding is it's sort of modeled on that sort of vibe and I guess the size.
I never, Mississippi Nights was like just right before my time actually going to shows. And I've heard a lot of stories and things, and then, from what I've heard, like I guess Mississippi Nights also had a really low ceiling, and the Del Mar Hall is a very tall ceiling, so again, it's kind of more, it's like a long narrow room kind of a feel to it, and I think for the most part it's a similar idea of mine. I think it's about 800 people over Del Mar Hall. So it's about a similar size to the Mississippi Nights and things. I think there's a lot of influence into the layout and things of how they were doing it. What I do really like is there's like you can put the bar is in the very back against the street there, and there's like a whole wall and two doors that go into the performance area. So they can pretty much shut off the bar completely from the room. So which is a nice more gives it more of a true like. You know, listening room almost. Yeah, at times like where you don't have a lot of that bar noise in there and things. So, so I like that part of it.
Yeah.
But yeah, you guys remember your first concert? Speaking of, you're going to Mississippi Nights.
My very first concert was The Firm at the old Checker Dome. The Firm was Jimmy Page and Paul Rodgers with Chris Slade and Tony Franklin. I know the entire lineup. And I saw them in 1986. That was my first show. It was a great show. It was a little awkward because I was like 15 and I was there with my father and there were all these people smoking marijuana, which made me feel a little sheepish, but it was great. My ears rang for days afterwards. That was my first show, and then followed by a succession of Mississippi Night shows, the Thrashing Doves, Hoodoo Gurus, lots of great shows at Mississippi Nights, sort of followed on from that sort of classic rock extravaganza.
Yeah, my first show, not too far after Graham's, I was Bryan Adams at the Checker Dome. I don't remember who opened, but I went with my parents and my brother and smelled something I had not smelled before. Then right after that, like maybe a year or two, I got to go see In Excess with Public Image Limited.
I was there, too.
Yeah, so.
And that was at the Kiel, right?
Was it the Kiel?
Yeah.
It
was the Kiel.
Okay, yeah. So, and I think I saw the Stones not too long after that at Bush Stadium. So.
Yeah, 89.
So I quickly got, went up stream there. But, yeah, I mean, so many good places to see shows. I mean, I was really impressed this summer. We got to see Paul McCartney at Bush Stadium, and I was pretty impressed how well, that was, I mean, a lot of times those stadium shows, it's just, you know, it's great to be out there with all those people, but you don't really get the real great sound, sonic experience, but I thought they did a good job this year, so.
And I was worried. I wasn't really familiar with Paul McCartney, but he actually has a lot of good songs.
Yeah. Yeah. Morning.
Yeah, I mean, it's he was remarkable. In a band. Fellas
got a picture.
Yeah.
Thanks to Kanye, he's now popular.
Right. How about you, Bob? Remember your...
It depends. I guess, you know, my dad has always played music and music, so it depends if you count. Like, maybe, I'm sure I was brought along at a young age and saw him play at some dingy bar once. I think he took me, like, to see Jan and Dean at Union Station.
Nice.
Something like that. First, I guess, club show, I guess. You know, once again, still had to be escorted, you know, my dad, because I was young enough to not be, you know, even of age to drive. I think it was 311 at Mississippi Nights.
Yes.
That was pretty cool because I, it's like my birthday, I got a drum set at Drum Headquarters. I think the same day their drummer was doing like an in-store signing. And I just kind of joking, it's my birthday, I don't have tickets. He's like, oh, we'll put you on the guest list. I was like, okay, that sounds Whoa. Great. Yeah. That was,
guest
you know,
list.
Yeah, you know, I still have a soft spot for 311. They're not a group I often listen to as much these days, but, like, I can't ever truly dislike them, especially because of that story. It was a great show.
Sure.
That's cool.
I just put up episode 311 the other day. So I made a little 311 joke, and I said in the text when I posted it, I said, you know, we had to come original on this one.
Yeah, episode. I did notice and appreciate that.
Yeah. Little 311 drop there.
Oh, not just down or all mixed up. You went for the sound system area joke. I appreciate that.
Yeah, I was trying to slide in. I thought about trying to slide in a couple more, but I was like, I don't want to go over the top with it.
Yeah.
Go over the top with your 311.
Right.
References.
Yeah. But I figured fans would catch that pretty quickly.
Yeah.
So.
Well, your first show.
Yeah, well, what was your first concert?
I was trying to, I guess, of a national performing act. I've been like Brian Setzer at Mississippi Nights or Samples.
The Samples.
The Samples.
I think...
And then some Riverport shows. Like I remember going to Point Fest and things like that.
I saw something online about... a Stray Cats reunion or something?
Yes, that's right. I did see something about that.
Yeah. So, like, see Brian out there again, coming around town. We'll see. But yeah, I my first one I recall, like, asking my mom to take me to was Matchbox 20, Semisonic, and Soul Asylum at the Kiel. And like 97, I think, or something. So yeah, that was my first. So I went to a couple shows, but like I didn't really have cousins or brother or sister or anybody my age, like that, or a little older that could take me to those Mississippi Night shows and that kind of stuff. Yeah. Like, so they were all, most of my cousins were, you know, they were too old to be hanging out with the younger cousins, kind of that kind of, there was that too much of an age gap there to where, so I didn't have that direct influence into a lot of that stuff. So a lot of the Stir, like Stir and the Urge and, you know, the Gravity Kills and a lot of these guys that I, real big fans of that played all that time, like, I learned all of it well after they quit playing. So like when the Urge came back and started doing all the reunion stuff after, you know, hiatus for a while, like it was... was very excited about that and stuff.
Yeah.
And then again, mentioning Stir, like seeing him at that Way Back Point Fest was the very first time I got to see him live, even though I've been a fan for a long time. So it's cool that a lot of these bands are kind of, you know, coming back around and things. So
yeah,
but yeah, I thought, speaking of Mississippi Nights too, with the Urge, is they did that last year. They did their Mississippi Nights stage, which had the pageant, which I thought was really cool. Like kind of. Put like a black curtain, make it like a look like a low ceiling, even though the balcony was still there, but I kind of give it up, try to recreate it the best possible and stuff, and I thought that was really, really a lot of fun. And but yeah, it was cool to see those guys and talk. I had Bill on the show right around that time, and we talked about some of that and stuff, and so it was really cool.
Yeah.
We got the records available. Like we said, get out there and pick it up at Music Record Shop, Vintage Vinyl, Planet Score, Euclid, and you can get it digitally at aquatane.bandcamp.com. And you guys want to drop in some songs from the record, give them a little taste of the what they can expect?
Yeah. Morning Wakes is a good, it's the start, the lead off track, and it's a good sort of way to dive in. It's sort of a song that has our sort of signature wall of sound, shoegazy, but, you know, melodic kind of feel, and some of those harmonies that Bob was talking about, and searing guitar solo at the end. So that's a good sort of way to dive in. And then the other track that we kind of talk about maybe is The Transformation, the title track, I think is another good song that sort of transforms during the course of the song, starts out one way and sort of finishes in another way. So
I'll drop them in, and like I said, if you like what you hear, head over to Facebook. They got a Facebook page. Tell them what you think of the record, and of course you can always come tell them live too, December 11th at Vintage Vinyl, and January 21st, Schlafly Tap Room. So come out and get involved. Check out those shows, pick up the record, and have a good time. So, yeah. You guys on any other? You guys got Instagram too, right, or something?
Yeah. And Twitter. Instagram, Twitter.
Yeah. So get on those two.
Barely on Snapchat.
Yeah.
We have two followers.
Yeah.
I think they're both related to me, or something. One's Chris Ward, but anyway, yes, we hope to build our Snapchat following soon.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. That's one I never got into. That one.
I don't know. It's a pretty active group on the other ones, but Snapchat, we're just not cool enough, I guess.
Yeah, well, help them out, guys. Go like them on Snapchat. Yeah,
tell us some Snapchat tips.
Send them some of those rainbow faces or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Do the space swaps.
Do the dog ear pictures or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know all that stuff. I missed that one. Missed that one.
Kids today.
I wouldn't say you missed it.
All right. All right. Well, thank you so much, guys.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate you guys doing the show.
So, yeah, our pleasure.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. We'll see you guys.
Take it easy.
Bye.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Well, yeah, that was it.